Here's a fact for you. Not all synthetic motor oils are created the same. Crude oil is like a bag of mismatched rocks, all different sizes and shapes coming together. Natural gas is more like a bag of marbles, all uniform in size and shape, designed to work together, reducing friction in your engine. That's why when Pennzoil reinvented motor oil, they started with natural gas, not crude. Pennzoil synthetic base oil is 99.5% free from the impurities you'd find in crude oil. So, the next time you need to change your oil, remember to ask for Pennzoil synthetic motor oil made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests, as you know, join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic, Trey Wingo here with you as we're getting set for this great reboot and relaunch and re-beginning in so many sports, and also waiting for the runway to get shorter and shorter for the NFL to figure out how the heck they're going to play in social distance.
The runway is closing down. It's approaching fast. For some sports, it's here, and we're seeing more players opt out. I don't think enough opt out to obviously affect the start or resumption of a season. We're all waiting. We're all kind of waiting for the what happens once we do start, and that's what July is going to bring. Well, a lot of these sports either starting or restarting, and then when they all get together, and we've had our positive test before they got together, and everybody worked through it,
right?
And then they reported to either their home city in baseball or the bubble in basketball. What happens then? And this is kind of where we are. And for football, they still have about a month. And we just had Booger McFarland on. I agree with him 100%. I asked, do you think any players in the NFL will opt out before training camp starts? And he said no, and I completely agree. I think all the players will show up. It's supposed to be a full season, which means a full season of pay that I think most guys do not want to miss or turn down. And then it's like, as you said, one player texts you and said, plan on going to camp, and then we think all hell's going to break loose. So
that's like, we'll
kind of wait and see what happens.
Then I got no idea what's going to happen next. And of course, one of the more interesting teams, regardless of what happened over the last few days, was going to be the New England Patriots, because they had said goodbye to Tom Brady, and now they bring in Cam Newton, and they become the first team ever in the same offseason to lose a former NFL MVP and gain an NFL MVP. And the caveat has always been in the discussions with Cam Newton, well, if he's healthy, this could be a really good fit. The question is he going to be healthy? So for more on that, we're delighted to be joined by our own Stefania Bell, our NFL and sports injury expert, who, by the way, again, Stefania, I think this is the first time we've had you on since the E60 with Alex Smith, which was absolutely incredible. That was an amazing thing. So before we go anywhere, I just wanted to say, you and the entire E60 team, job well done on that one.
Oh, well, thank you. That was certainly a labor of love over about a year and a half, and I can't thank Alex and his wife Elizabeth enough for allowing us to accompany them on that incredible journey, which, by the way, isn't over. So, stay tuned, because you never know what's going to happen without it.
He's still trying to get him back there and play. So the caveat has always been, boy, this is a great signing for the Patriots if Cam is healthy. And he hasn't played since week two of the 2019 season. He was placed on IR with that foot injury, ironically, coincidentally, however you want to say it, which happened in a preseason game in Foxborough last summer, the only preseason game he played in. He's gone, had a couple of shoulder surgeries over the last couple of years, and has also just taken a lot of hits more than anything else. So let's first and foremost deal with the two most important things for a quarterback: your throwing shoulder and the ability to move, because Cam is a running quarterback, like his feet. In terms of your studying of his injuries and the things he's had to overcome, what are realistic expectations for both of those injuries?
Well, let's start with the shoulder, because going into last season, it's hard to believe it was last season. It feels like forever ago. But there were questions about his arm because he was coming off that second surgery. And when I went to camp, they were very optimistic about his arm. There really weren't many concerns on the part of the Panthers. Cam was throwing anywhere from 50 to 70 balls a day in practice. I mean, they felt like he was ready to go. And he had gotten much stronger in a lot of the muscles that support the shoulder. he was throwing with his normal arc. If you recall, when the shoulder was really bothering him, he was having to contort his body to try and deliver the ball because he simply didn't have the range of motion to accomplish a normal throwing motion. That was all rectified before the season, and then he injured his foot. So as far as the shoulder goes, I don't think there was any real concern about that. The foot was a Lisfranc injury, but it's important to remember there's a wide range of variants when it comes to Lisfranc injuries. We tend to think of the most dramatic, the fractured dislocation, the ones that require surgery and take 6 months to recover. But there are very subtle injuries, which are mild sprains, and often some downtime will allow them to recover. That just didn't happen for Cam. It was a stable midfoot injury. There was nothing that indicated surgery, even on consecutive visits and consultations with Dr. Anderson, who formerly was a team doctor with the Panthers, not to mention that he is now a foot and ankle doctor to pretty much all the athletes, even beyond football. So the problem became that Cam really didn't trust that foot. For whatever reason, with these subtle injuries, sometimes you just don't have confidence. It feels unstable, even if that doesn't show up on imaging. And ultimately, the decision was, okay, it's not getting better. Let's do a procedure. It was a modified procedure, not as extensive as a typical Lisfranc surgery. So much quicker recovery time. And I would just point you to his Instagram workout post, where he is running stadiums, doing these incredible agility workouts, all of the things that would test that foot. And I think he's shown us that the foot is fully recovered. So I'm not worried about his health going into New England. I don't think they are either. Or they wouldn't have made the signing. They're very thorough, obviously. I think the question is going to be, can he stay healthy? That's really the question. You brought it up. His style of play has contributed to these injuries in his career. That's going to be the question going forward.
So the question I'll go from here then is, which body part, the shoulder or the foot, would you worry about the most and why going forward?
Well, it would be the shoulder, and I'll tell you why. Most throwers, you assume, have a shoulder injury related to overuse. They throw repetitively. It breaks down over time. That's the reason for the injury. That was not the reason for the injury in Cam's case. Do you remember when he was partway through the last season, 2018, where he had issues with that shoulder? It was often due to contact. Cam plays only one way, as you know, and he's a guy who I think has one of the highest percentages of goal line sneak touchdowns in the league, and he's known for extending his arm through a pile to get that first down or to get a score, and often landing on an outstretched arm is a really good way to damage your shoulder. If you go back to the original injury for his shoulder, it was when he was trying to make a tackle after throwing an interception. So it's the nature of how his shoulder was injured that makes you concerned that that could be the problem. If you look at his concussion history, it was often because he was taking big hits. I mean, to the extent that we were often wondering, was there enough? Were the penalties being called appropriately with all the hits to Cam? So I think when it comes to his physical play, you worry more about head and shoulder, because for quarterbacks, typically how head and shoulder injuries happen is in being tackled and taken to the ground.
Stephon Yabel, our ESPN injury expert, is with us. And that's interesting that you mentioned the goal line situation, because obviously a couple of things to me come to mind right away. Drew Brees' gruesome shoulder injury down on the goal line when he was still a San Diego Charger, and that obviously wasn't a problem as he went on to set records and all kinds of them with the Saints. But you mentioned that sneak and how many times Cam has done that down the goal line. That was a huge part of the offense for Tom Brady when he was a part of the Patriots offense. I mean, he was considered one of the best goal line sneakers in all of the NFL. So I expect that that's something they'll try and keep in that offense going forward, because that's something that Brady, who is athletically nowhere near what Cam is, was very successful at.
But I think it said it's a different kind of sneak, right? So if you are going behind your line and just pushing forward through them, and kind of, they create a little pocket for you and you kind of dive through, that's a whole body sneak. If you're Cam, it's often a leap with an outstretched arm, which is different and puts your shoulder at a little bit more risk. So I think it's really all about his awareness of not trying to play differently. We went through that experiment before in the Panthers, if you'll recall. They were going to feature fewer designed runs for Cam and hopefully
that lasted like a week.
Remember, wasn't it, you know, the Lions got a roar or something of that nature?
Yeah.
And they just really couldn't do that, impose that on him, because it affected his overall ability to play the position. So you never want a guy thinking about, oh, if I do this, I might get hurt. But you do want them making smart decisions. Maybe don't leap for that extra yard or extend your arm for that extra yard unless it's a first down critical situation. Don't do it on an average play. Get out of bounds when you can. Things, just making smarter decisions. And I would guess that Cam's probably learned that by now, and certainly he knows the importance of staying on the field, assuming he takes over this job when he gets to New England, because he's on a one-year deal and he has something to prove. But with him having something to prove and looking like he's in the shape that he's in, I think he could have a bounce back season.
Talking to Stefania Bell here on Golic and Wingo, and speaking of smart moves, is it a smart move, or what are the smart moves for the NFL as they start camp with some positive tests you know there's going to be, and how they proceed or try and proceed through the season?
Oh boy, it's a big, you know, this is actually a lot of what I've been working on the last couple months, taking a look at all the leagues and their plans to return. And I'm wading through protocols for every different league right now. And we don't have the detailed ones in the NFL because those details are still being worked out. I think the thing that I keep hearing is, you know, we talk about this novel coronavirus, meaning it's new. And details are emerging constantly. The science changes daily. I can barely keep up with the new, the literature that's coming out quickly, which isn't always necessarily the best conducted because it's being conducted rapidly and without peer review. But people are trying to absorb information and learn on the fly as much as possible, and the NFL is no different. And as much as they have these plans and goals in place, they also understand that everything is fluid and subject to change up until the last minute. So for me, I look at where we are. We're not quite to July. You're talking about players returning July 28th. There's a lot that can happen in 4 weeks if you just look 4 weeks back. And so would I be surprised if things got delayed? Not at all. Would I be surprised if they gathered for camp but the season got delayed? Not at all. Because we just don't know how this is going to proceed. And ultimately, the Players Association is working with the NFL very closely on this to make sure that everything's done within reason, right, in the best interest of the players. And I would just point to the NFLPA medical director, Dr. Tom Mayer, his experience. He was command physician at the Pentagon during 9/11. He was responsible for diagnosing the anthrax poisoning in the postal workers shortly thereafter. He's functioned in crisis mode, and he's worked directly with Dr. Fauci in the past. So his leadership here is really integral to how this proceeds. And they're lucky to have him, but they will remain fluid as long as the information is changing.
Well, you're so right, Stefania. Look, a month ago, May 25th, Florida was taking a victory lap, essentially, thinking, look how well we've done with this.
Exactly.
And then clearly things have taken a dramatic 180 in that state, as well as states like Arizona and Texas and even California. Outside of the Bay Area counties, California has had a massive spike upward. Stefania, as always, we appreciate your time and appreciate your insights this morning. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime.
Going to be interesting. Again, that's got to be the toughest thing because there doesn't seem to be any exact answers at this point.
Look, at this point, we're all doing the Samuel L. Jackson GIF from Jurassic Park. Hold on to your butts.
Right.
I mean, that's what it is. None of us, we'd like to think we have this thing thought out one way or the other, but you're lying to yourself and everybody if you think, oh, I know how this is going to play out.
Yeah.
Nobody has any idea.
No, they do not.
And we are just going into this hitting hope, for lack of a better term, on a lot of situations. So we do have the NBA trying to finish, and baseball trying to start, weirdly, coincidentally, ironically, about the same time, late July. I think opening day is what, July 23rd, 24th?
23rd. It's supposed to be one of the highlight games, Yankees at Washington.
Yeah, National.
Max Scherzer, Garrett Cole. I mean, I just keep that in my mind
yeah.
and say, man, can we get there?
Yeah.
Can we get to that? and start with that.
And right after that, NBA is going to resume.
Right. July 30th.
July 30th. So we have all of that. So, you know, baseball's trying to start and we'll see how they go. And we had, you know, Doggy Downer, Buster Olney, our baseball insider with us. I'm not saying he's wrong. He's just relaying the information that he's being told. He, again, has it 5% they start, 0% they finish. Obviously, it's a lot higher that the NBA is going to start. Well, Brian Windhorst had it at 100% they start, 90% they finish. But when they begin, what are we actually looking at, right? Because you and I always talk about, especially with the way training camps and football have been watered down and a lot of players held out of preseason, really the first couple of weeks of the NFL season tend to be more like a training camp or preseason games. So with all these players being away so far and getting used to the weird new environment, bubble, campus resort, however you want to phrase it, with everybody heading down to Orlando, what should we expect when this season resumes at the end of July? Well, J.J. Redick of the Pelicans was on with Scott Van Pelt last night at SportsCenter, and here were his thoughts on the actual level of play you'll be seeing out of the gate.
The reality is there might be some bad basketball, especially early on.
Like real garbage basketball.
No, I think that's the reality. Look, this is not – it's not like we have a normal ramp-up period to get to that month window before we start playing games.
Right.
We're all going to be a little bit behind. Hopefully the guys have taken enough care of their bodies, but, you know, I personally feel ready to go. I've tried to stay in shape. I've lost a little bit of weight since the season ended and I've been able to have access to a gym. So I've been able to play.
The tough part is again, is when this quote unquote by JJ Redick, bad basketball goes on. This is going to be the time for the lower seeded teams to try and make the move, either to get to the playoffs or if anybody can move up a bit, with their seeding when they're kind of working this all out. Because remember, we haven't had any of the 5-on-5 practices yet. That'll all be when they get down in Orlando, starting a training camp type, like atmosphere until they get to the restart of the season. Right now, as he said, they're going to the gym.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing things at their facilities in clusters of just a couple. So, while they can do the running and the shooting, they can't really do the playing, the 5-on-5 playing. Not saying that they're all going to forget how.
No.
But it's professional sports. So when you turn it on, you expect professional play. And just like you mentioned with the NFL, with the way preseasons have gone now, sometimes it takes a little while before you get to that play that you expect to see out of professional athletes. And there just isn't a lot of time, like I said, for when you get in that 8, 9, 10, 11, you know, 12 of those extra teams that are there trying to fight to get into the playoffs. It may cost you, depending on how rusty you are.
Right. So we're starting this again because of the hard pause in March. March 11th, I believe, was the day when Rudy Gobert and subsequently teammate Donovan Mitchell of the Utah Jazz tested positive because of the pandemic. So we're starting this up again, even though we're seeing that spike in cases in Florida. And then there's everything else that's been going on in the country where we've finally seen real change in terms of things happening that have been, quite frankly, objectionable for a long time. Whether we saw Bubba Wallace finally getting rid of the Confederate flag and NASCAR agreeing with him that the Confederate flag should not fly at NASCAR events. The complete outrage and unrest over the senseless killing of, among others, George Floyd, and how that has led to real positive understanding of how people that look different than you and I live their lives in terms of their relationships with members of authority and especially in terms of police forces across this country. And there has been real change and sort of an awakening. Like, we're not lying. These are things that actually happen to us all the time. So Fred VanVleet of the Raptors, who's already down at Fort Myers because they had to cross the border early because of the 14-day quarantine before they can begin taking part of the bubble experience in Orlando. They're down in Fort Myers getting ready for that with their head coach, Nick Nurse, and they've had a surprisingly good season. I think second best record in the East, even though they lost Kawhi Leonard in the offseason to the Clippers. And Fred VanVleet was on a Zoom call and basically talked about the NBA going back is good on some levels. He doesn't really like the timing of it all.
Yeah, it sucks. It sucks, man. And it's terrible timing, but that's been 2024. So I think, obviously we all know the right thing to do is to not play, to take a stand, to, you know, morally, yes, that makes sense. But life goes on. We're all young black guys, and none of us want to give any money back, and I don't think that we should. And I think that money can be used in many different ways. And this is not going to end this summer regardless or in these next couple of months. This issue racial injustice, social injustice, police brutality, all of these things are not ending anytime soon. And so our fight is long term. And so that was part of my decision. But if the league or more of my guys would have came together and said we didn't want to play, I would have sat out as well. I wouldn't have fought it. But I think most of us decide to play, and it's something that we'll have to live with. But I trust that my heart's in the right place, and I'm doing enough to really make change.
Yeah, I mean, listen, everybody has their own decision. Their own decision about do you sit out and keep the momentum of what they're doing with the social injustice is going, or as he said, and that's the reality of it, man. Guys don't want to give back money.
Yeah,
I mean that we talk about a reality check show. That's reality as well. Is there is a lot of money out there, and as he said, you can do things with that money while you're in the bubble, and also, you know, keeping people aware of what you want them to be aware of. But you can use your money as well, so you can make it so it works for you.
Correct.
Right. And you could still, that's why there's no right or wrong answer.
None.
You know, anybody that thinks that if a baseball player decides not to play, that their teammates are going to be upset with them, I'm sorry, they're not. They may be bummed and say, oh, man, especially if it's one of the top players, oh, man, this is going to be difficult without this player. But if it's for a health reason, either them or their family, they're going to understand. I mean, they're not going to be vilified by their other teammates. It's just not going to happen. So.
No.
There's a lot of seriousness here. That's why we always like to inject a little bit of humor to make you smile a little bit. And with the thought that in the NBA, if a player got suspended during the restart in the bubble, he would be sent to his room by Adam Silver.
Basically given a timeout.
Yeah. I mean, this is what you give to your kids. But you're in a bubble. You got to do something if you get suspended. So we've asked you what other punishments should be levied against suspended players when you're in the bubble for the NBA. One, Mark, our buddy Mark says, make them ride It's a Small World in a Mr. Potato Head costume with the air conditioning turned off for 2 hours a day until the suspension is over.
Well, that's just too much.
Wow. Another one said 5 to 6 hours of continuous riding in It's a Small World. I'm going to tell you right now, when my kids were young and I was living in Orlando, while I was still playing in Philly, I had a place in Orlando. We would go to Disney World. And the kids were young. I mean, this was in the early 90s and early to mid 90s, and they were born in 89 and 90. Sydney wasn't around then. It was just Mike and Jake. We would go in It's a Small World, and I would use it. The kids loved it. They were at a perfect age for it. Man, that air conditioning was running in there, and I used that for a couple of minutes of absolute downtime, shut my eyes, and I didn't care how many times they wanted to ride it. Yeah. It was cool in there. I got a little bit of rest in there, and they enjoyed it. That's what we like to call a win-win.
Mike, I'll see your Small World and raise you one, because our daughter's favorite ride at Disney World was the Ellen ride at Epcot. That Ellen ride, Universe of Energy, is 47 minutes.
Oh, no.
47 minutes. And, you know, you're running around the park with two young kids, a 47-minute air conditioning
nap. I haven't been on
it.
So that's just a sit. You're sitting in one spot.
You move around and you go through all this stuff.
But you're sitting. You move by sitting. You're not walking around.
No, you're sitting in a tram and it moves you to one spot to 47 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
Greatest halftime of all time.
Wow.
You're running around the park. You're doing this. Universe of Energy? You bet, Chels. We're going to do the Universe
wow.
of Energy. The Ellen ride is 47 minutes long, and every parent in there was like, yes. You take the wins when they come your way.
Awesome.
Thank you, Ellen's Universe of Energy at Epcot. Coming up, why one player's decision to sit out the Major League Baseball season goes beyond the pandemic. We'll get to that next and hear what Buster Olney has to say when he joined us earlier. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2. And we're certainly seeing that happening. Golic and Wingo with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Penzol Performance Line. You heard in the rejoin there that Ian Fitzsimmons basically saying Ryan Zimmerman of the Nationals, Mike Leake, have opted out, as did Ian Desmond of the Colorado Rockies. And he put a lengthy statement up on his Instagram account in the ways that why he thought he was going to decide to opt out. And a lot of it had to do with what's going on in the country. He said, think about it right now in baseball. We've got a labor war. We've got rampant individualism on the field. In clubhouses, we've got racist, sexist, homophobic jokes or flat-out problems. We've got cheating. We've got minority issues from top down. One African-American GM, two African-American managers, less than 8% black players, no black majority team owners. Perhaps most disheartening of all of this is a puzzling lack of focus on understanding how to change those numbers, a lack of focus on making baseball accessible and possible for all kids, not just those who are privileged enough to afford it. And then he said, I'm not going to be going away from baseball. What I'm going to be doing is staying right here in my hometown of Sarasota, Florida, and working with the Little League. So I'm going to do my part. I'm going to stay here and make sure we get Sarasota youth baseball back on track. It's what I can do in the scheme of so much, so I am.
Yep. So that, again, this is all personal choice on what he wants to do, and he brings up more issues in baseball. That when we had Buster on, you know, said these are certainly things that have been brought up before in baseball, but more and more players are starting to opt out. Certainly it's not going to be enough to not have the season. We believe that the spring training 2.0 will start.
I mean, Buster put it at 5%.
5% that the season actually starts. So that's down the road. It's like the third week of July, but we did have Buster on a little bit earlier talking about the peer pressure amongst other players.
What I've heard from players is that players are concerned. They respect the decisions of their peers. Guys like Ryan Zimmerman, we heard Ian Desmond. You know, I do think people in the sport are wondering about Mike Trout. You know, he was out front at the outset of this when he talked about how his wife is pregnant and if it were something to be take him away from her, it wasn't something that he was going to be comfortable with. And I do think that the peer pressure will manifest itself more when the teams get together.
I don't know. All I can do is try and put myself back as a player again in a locker room with my teammates. And, you know, we always talk about the bond that is there. And we talk about things that you leave somebody alone about. And certainly one of them is when they're talking about their money, it's their business and all that, where you don't get involved in it, or there isn't peer pressure for the most part. There is not. Now, this is something completely different than anything we've experienced, right?
Right.
A global pandemic.
Yeah. Not since 1918.
Yeah. So
for us,
you know, if there is a player that says, Ryan Zimmerman said, you know, I have a newborn at home, and his mother is at high risk for the virus as well. If you have reasons like that and you're not going to show up, I find it hard to believe that your teammate is going to look cross at you. Now, initially there might be, oh, damn, this is going to be tough, especially, you know, we're talking the Nationals, you know, they won the World Series. So you're talking about what you want to try and continue to do, especially if you're one of the better teams, you know, you would have somebody kind of say, oh man, that's really going to hurt. But I really find it hard to believe over time that a teammate isn't going to say, okay, I have to understand that if they feel that this isn't healthy for them, for whatever reason, for them or their kids, because again, this is baseball where they're not in a bubble. So they're traveling and coming home to their family, to their wife, to their mothers, if their mothers live in with them, to their kids. Is anybody susceptible? And they choose not to do that and take the chance? I'm sorry. I just find it hard to believe that there's going to be many teammates that are going to look cross at them and really, you know, shake a finger at them.
Well, what are the always things? Don't mess with someone else's money and don't mess with someone else's family, right? Those are the lines that you try not to cross. And that would certainly be crossing one of these lines if someone, like Ryan Zimmerman, or we heard from Ian Desmond, opting out for these very reasons. I mean, I think it might have been different when you were playing, but I think we're in an era where there's so much more exposure to all these things that are out there for everyone to see. I think it might be interpreted differently now.
Yeah, you look at, we talk about with Mike Trout, he talks about his wife being pregnant if he opts out. Yeah. You know, now again, you brought this up earlier, he's the best player in the game, but what if because we always say like in the NBA, what if it was like a Anthony Davis or a Paul George or a Giannis or a LeBron decided to do that?
Because the odds I think the odds to win the World Series right now, the two favorites are the Dodgers and the Yankees.
So what if it was an Aaron Judge? What if it was a Garrett Cole
who
just signed for $324 million? What if it was one of them? You know, that said, we're out. What was it, Clayton Kershaw?
Mookie Betts, who's just come over specifically to help the Dodgers this year.
Said we're out. I mean, that would put a real, you know, damage to their hopes of that. But again, I really think while a teammate initially would be like, oh my God, really? I mean, if it's for a health reason, a high risk, someone in your family, I mean, I don't know how you can be mad.
It's hard to say, you know, I think you're right. The initial reaction would be, wait, what?
I think it would.
And then they'd say, all right, because what you always want to say, walk a mile in my shoes, right? Go understand what I'm dealing with in my situation. And I think most people would be understanding of that. But it is, look, this is the fact that they're not bubbled makes a huge difference. Yeah. And that's why when we always talk about the NFL, which is going to be impossible to bubble, especially in colleges, yeah, it's impossible to bubble.
Absolutely is. I mean, think about the couple of players in the NBA. Avery Bradley has a young son, 6-year-old, right?
Yeah, that has massive issues recovering from respiratory.
How do you look at him cross-eyed?
Can't.
Trevor Ariza for Portland says, listen, the way it worked out, my ex-wife, you know, in visitation, I only have that 1 month with my 12-year-old.
Right.
Who's looking at that and saying, oh, no.
How dare you?
For the team. I mean, come on.
Yeah. So we're going to see how this plays out for a variety of reasons, health-wise, economically, societally. They're all going to be in play, and people are going to have some sort of understanding about that. Speaking of being in play, the Ivy League and Harvard specifically was ahead of the curve in March. Are they about to be ahead of the curve once again when it comes to college athletics? We'll get to that.
I've gone blank on my Zoom screen.
It happens, man. It happens. I wouldn't worry about it in any way.
No, I'm not going to. We'll talk about something.
Golic and Wingo here with you. Glad you're with us this morning. So there's an interesting column up by Heather Denich on ESPN.com. And it was Harvard specifically in the spring that really got this whole cancellation thing going, because the Ivy League basketball tournament, postseason tournament, was set to be played at Harvard University. As we all know, the city of Boston was one of the first major spots in the United States just slammed by corona. We believe it was a worldwide medical conference that happened in February where everybody flew in across the globe.
Yeah, there were three professors from Italy that were positive, and I think 190 people out of the 200 and some there tested positive, and
right.
Then they went to New York. And,
right. It just,
and then, hello.
It exploded.
Yep.
So they were the first to shut down the postseason tournament, saying it wouldn't be played. And at the time, we were like, oh, this is terrible. We talked to some of the coaches, how they had to deal with it. And then, lo and behold, after the Rudy Gobert test, ACC, SEC, Big Ten, all these conferences shut it down, which eventually led to the canceling of the NCAA tournament. So the reason we're bringing that up, because on the column on ESPN.com by Heather Denich, the Ivy League, according to her, is considering two possibilities for an altered football season due to the pandemic. And one would be just to play conference-only games, of which there are seven. There'd be a seven-game schedule. They normally play at 10.
Right.
And it would start late September, September 19th. The other one would include foregoing the entire fall in favor of a seven-game conference-only spring football season that would begin in April and conclude in May, according to a source reported from TMG Sports. Now, I have to say, for a variety of reasons, I think it would be easier for the Ivy League to pull this off than almost any Power 5 conference for a couple of reasons. One, because of the logistics of it. Again, the longest, they don't fly to play these football games. The longest ride anywhere in the Ivy League is from Penn, which is in the city of Philadelphia, to Dartmouth, which is in Hanover, New Hampshire, which is about a 6-hour drive. So logistically, of getting where you needed to go would be a lot easier inside the confines of the Ivy League.
Right.
But let's be honest. I mean, there are usually a couple of Ivy League players that are potentially drafted every year. That would not be the case for the Power 5 conferences, specifically the SEC, which seems to dominate the draft every year. And then they would be playing these athletes who have a best chance of being drafted will be playing right around the time they would normally have pre-draft visits and all this kind of stuff. So it's exponentially more difficult for other leagues to do.
It would be so damning for the players that are looking to be drafted this year in the Ivy League to play in the spring. Then
right.
They would be in such trouble. And usually you're not getting from the Ivy League guys that still have a year to play where you know they're going to be drafted really high and they could afford to not play. That's not the case here. What the Ivy League has done is given themselves, we keep using the term runway.
Yeah.
They've given themselves a little more runway. Now, normally they'll do the summer workouts like everybody else. We've talked time and time again about some of the Power 5 schools where the players, the student athletes had shown up in June, and we've seen a lot of positive tests, but that was to be expected. They're coming in from all parts of the country. So they started doing that in June for the voluntary workouts. Well, this year the Ivy League is not opening up their campuses. now, so there's no athletes doing the early workouts.
Right.
So they feel that's an advantage for them to let this thing play out more to see where it's going to go and even push the season. They can because they're only going to play 7 games instead of the 10. So they can push the season further into September to start it if they want to, and possibly even later. Again, since there's only 7 games, we'll have to wait and see. But right now they're talking about pushing it to later in September. So they wouldn't have their players show up till much later than they normally would, so they can kind of see where everything is and kind of get a better picture of the landscape. And to your point, the longest travel is 6 hours. Now, they're not in a bubble. You know, they're still traveling somewhere and dealing it with hotels and people who are coming in and helping them and then going back to their campuses and such. But it does give them a little more time to kind of see how this all plays out, whether they want to start now or not, because none of the campuses are open for any student athletes at this point.
By the way, Miami's athletic director, Blake James, was on with Packer and Durham this morning on the ACC network and said while he's planning on having football back in the fall, he thinks the leaders around the league are collectively getting more nervous about it and is urging people to do their part, which is wear a mask. Quote, "It's important for all of us to continue to follow the guidelines that our leaders have put in place. We need to do what we can to have a fall sports season. If we want to have college football this fall, which is my plan, is that we will, I believe the other leaders in the league believe that this is the case as we sit here today, but I think everyone is getting more nervous. If we all do our part, then the odds of us having a college football season are greater than if we don't."
Well, I mean, it's the smart way to go about it, but let's go to two leagues. We had Buster Olney on earlier, and that's one of the things he said about players to other players is, hey, guys, hey, professional athletes, guys, we're doing this for a living. Let's be smart about this. Let's show some discipline so we can have our season. Let's not put ourselves in bad positions by not following the guidelines to where there could be, again, because this is different, I'll continue to say it, than hospitalizations and, God forbid, deaths. This is just about positive tests.
Right.
Where where guys even have been coming back from them and feeling fine. But if you get enough of them, it's going to stop a team from playing and then eventually maybe a league from playing. So there is that from the professional players to one another. Man, let's be smart about this. Now we're going to college and we want to say it and you say it. Listen, we say a lot of things to our kids as parents because you're a parent and it's what you're supposed to say to your kid.
Right.
But then them listening can be a different
Completely different
so
dynamic.
I'm not sitting here and saying every 18 to 22 year old don't expect them to listen because they're not old enough to. They are. They are old enough to understand, but also to expect them at that age, when they're all at that age, especially an athlete where you feel invincible, where they see guys have gotten it, but nothing bad has happened to them. They get sick for a little bit and then they come back. They're going to have that in their mind and said, okay, we're all together, you know, together here. We can just keep kind of doing our things. And that's where things can get lax. So telling professional athletes that who are trying to have a season and telling college athletes, college kids that I think are two different things. It's the right thing to say.
Yeah.
And I'm sure as these college student athletes are getting back on campus, they're being told social distance. The setups are made so they're social distance and to have masks on and only have groups here and there. So they're all saying and showing what they should be doing. It's just a matter of, are they all doing it?
Right. And that's why you have to find different ways to reinforce the message. And Ohio State, a lot of people looked at them sideways when they had the kids sign the Buckeye Pledge. And basically, you know, it was not something that is enforceable by law.
Right.
But basically, I give Ohio State credit one thing. They're saying, look, guys, you're pledging to do this so you'll be there for your teammate. It was just another way, in my opinion, to reinforce the idea of this is what you need to do if you want to play.
Some things athletes do with their teammates, especially when they're, you know, together too, but away, be accountable.
Yeah.
Be accountable not only to yourself, but to your teammate. So when you're home on your own, make sure you're working out. Make sure you're doing what the strength and conditioning coach wants you to do. So when you come back, you're right where you need to be. Hold each other accountable for that. And then when you're in the same space working out, hold each other accountable to do the work that's involved. And this is just another issue with it, right?
Right.
Be accountable for what we need to be doing so we can have a season.
Well, that's one of the greatest motivational tools of all time is if someone does something wrong, everyone else has to run steps that guy did something wrong. That's another way of driving home that message. We all need to be on the same page here going forward. So we'll see. I'm not sure if many other colleges or leagues can do what the Ivy League are doing, but it's something that they are definitely putting on the table. Coming up next, what concerns should the leaders of the NBA have as cases spike in Florida? We'll talk to a former NBA Players Association president next about what he thinks about what might happen. Golic and Wingo.